All Eyes on Alcoa.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Alcoa is Wall Street's shiny object of the day. It's the first day of the second quarter, and the aluminum giant is the first Dow-listed company to report quarterly earnings. Doug Foreman is the director of equities at Highmark Capital in San Francisco. He joins us live. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Stacey.
So I get the sense that investors are hoping to see sort of how the second quarter is going from Alcoa and how the economy in general is doing. No offense to aluminum, but is Alcoa really a good bellwether?
Well, right now, I'd say normal times, Alcoa is a decent indicator of how things are going. But right now, I think investors are pretty well aware of the fact that pricing is very weak in aluminum and inventories are too high and demand's been very soft over the last 12 months. So we're not expecting much from Alcoa. Probably lose money, and the question is how much.
What companies or sectors are you going to be watching this quarter to get a sense of how the economy is doing?
Well, I think the banks are still key to look at. I mean, the ones that are left standing anyway, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Bank America, looking at their earnings are going to be important. We want to look for continued recovery there. And then I think in some of the other areas like tech and healthcare, names like Cisco and Intel and Microsoft, companies that, you know, aren't way out of whack in terms of supply-demand will be important. And most importantly, what they say about the outlook and their businesses will be very important going forward.
So the group of eight is meeting this week, and the G8 countries are set to talk about the global economy today. Is there anything that can come out of that meeting that would make you feel better?
Well, I think what they'll probably do is just continue to talk about how we're not out of the woods yet globally, that they still need to engage in recovery efforts worldwide. This has definitely been a global meltdown the last 12 months. And so I would expect them to continue on that path, which they've been on, and point out that they don't believe that we're out of the woods yet, which I would concur with.
Doug Foreman is the director of equities at Highmark Capital in San Francisco. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Stacey.
So maybe it's just that it's the dawn of a new quarter, but the markets seem to be in good spirits this morning. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 0.4%. The NASDAQ is up 0.6%. The S&P 500 also up 0.5%. Overseas markets, not such a good day. They were down across the board. Total world domination. Well, total web domination. Microsoft and Google are battling it out. A month ago, Microsoft launched a search engine called Bing, which was a direct assault on Google. And in a blog posting late last night, Google announced plans to get serious about its operating system. Take that, Windows. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has more.
It'll be called Google Chrome OS. OS stands for operating system, the standard software that controls a PC. Google said in an official blog post that its new operating system would be defined by its speed, simplicity, and security. This latest move by Google is aimed at Microsoft's jugular. The operating system is at the heart of computing, and it's the foundation of Microsoft's business model. The announcement has already raised questions about Google's dominance in computing. Google CEO Eric Schmidt says his company's focus is consumer choice. He spoke to Marketplace's Kai Rizdal in an interview recorded last week.
We feel that as long as we are really focused on consumer benefit, in other words, if the action we take really does benefit the average consumer, that the rest of the industry, the rest of the government, will get around that because consumers speak in democracies.
Google Chrome OS will first appear on netbooks in the second half of 2010. No response or blog posts yet from Microsoft. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
The unemployment rate is expected to top 10% by the end of this year, and that is pushing more people into financial distress. It's also changing the geography of poverty. More low-income people live in suburbs than cities now. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has more.
Rising levels of unemployment have been pretty much the same in cities and suburbs. Alan Berube is a senior fellow with the Brookings Institution.
That's a change from previous recessions where the cities seemed to take it on the chin and the suburbs avoided the worst.
He says Chicago exemplifies the national trend. When Nixon was president, about a third of Chicago's poor lived in the suburbs. Now it's about half. 41-year-old Vanita Thomas is one of those people. She has an MBA and worked as an accountant until she was hospitalized for a serious illness. After that, she managed to find a few temp jobs until the economy went cold.
Nobody was hiring. You couldn't find a temp assignment. Everything went dead.
She went on unemployment, but that only lasted until the fall.
September, my unemployment's running out, and basically my landlord, he's saying, you're a nice tenant, but Ms. Thomas, if you can't afford the rent, I have to put you out.
A friend from her church let Thomas stay with her in the suburbs. When she still didn't have money for rent last January, Thomas had to move into a local shelter.
That day was like my ground zero, because that's when the reality really hit me that I was homeless.
She lived dormitory style with roommates. Thomas was grateful to have a roof over her head, but angry about her circumstances.
Years back, they told you, go to school, get an education so you get a good job, so you would never have to worry about being in a situation like that. I kept saying, how can this happen to me?
Some of the increased poverty in the suburbs has happened gradually. Immigrants who traditionally settled in inner cities are increasingly moving directly to suburbs. That's where the jobs are, or were. Again, Alan Berube with Brookings.
This recession is going to perhaps accelerate the long-term trend toward the suburbanization of poverty.
Some of the suburban poor will bounce back. Vanita Thomas got a job with a call center. She earns less than she did as an accountant, but it's enough for an apartment. And she can set aside some money each month, aware that she's just a couple paychecks away from being homeless. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.